MSO News, giving voice to the North Shore. This is North Shore Today for Wednesday, December 6, 2023, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber. Moynihan Lumber, supporting local news coverage and communities on the North Shore. I'm Rick Moore with a look at today's headlines. There's some snow in the area. Congressman Moulton pushes for transportation improvements, and a Gloucester fisherman leads a one-man protest in the harbor.
I'm Bill Newell, and later in sports, local North Shore players spark an Endicott College men's basketball win last night. Rick?
Very good, Bill. Thank you. Cloudy, low 30s, high tide, Gloucester Harbor, 6 p.m. Weather is in the news today. The North Shore picked up its first measurable snowfall of the winter season overnight. Parts of Cape Ann picked up about an inch of snow, while other areas picked up just a trace amount from the light ocean effect that is moving across the area. The city of Lynn is looking for snowplow drivers this winter. The Daily Item reports that DPW Commissioner Andy Hall says the goal is to have 250 pieces of equipment under contract. Last year, the city had slightly under 200. Lynn is increasing the rate of pay for snowplow contractors to $115 an hour. A Gloucester fisherman will be protesting this afternoon in Gloucester Harbor over onerous fishing regulations. Ethan Foreman reports in today's Gloucester Times that Captain Lenny Russo will be peacefully protesting. His attorney, Stephen Willett, said that Russo feels he's being treated unfairly by the overzealous law enforcement. This apparently stems from having a small percentage of his catch deemed undersized during trips in October and November. Congressman Seth Moulton spoke at a House Transportation and Infrastructure hearing on the closed Hall Whitaker Bridge in Beverly. Paul Layton writes in the Salem News Today that Moulton requested the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers find a way to speed up the plan to build a replacement bridge. Moulton also recently spoke in Congress about the lack of high-speed rail service in the United States.
Japan has had a high-speed rail network since 1964. They've had zero fatalities. I don't think we can say that about our highways or our airlines. You can travel all over Europe on high-speed rail. You can go to Paris from London for dinner and be back in time to go to bed. And yet we can't rely on Amtrak to get to New York in a couple hours. Some people refer to the Northeast Corridor as high-speed rail, but as Dr. Ohanian pointed out, what really matters is average speed, not top speed. The top speed on the Northeast Corridor is 150 miles per hour. That doesn't even qualify as high-speed rail in the rest of the world. And the average speed on the Northeast Corridor is below 100 miles per hour.
Moulton pointed out one Florida rail system that is having success.
Now, we're rightly celebrating what Brightline has done with private sector investment and innovation in Florida. And so far, the success has been impressive. For those of you who are skeptical as to whether people will ever ride trains, specifically high-speed rail, you might look at what's happening in Florida, where simply having new trains, faster trains, great customer service, convenience, is attracting significant numbers of riders. And those trains go 110 miles per hour. 110 miles per hour. That's half the speed of trains in China.
Moulton believes that it's a waste of money to expand highways and airports when high-speed rail service makes more sense.
There are countless ridership studies, but even more actual experience across the world that shows that if you can get by train somewhere in even 4 or 5 hours, you're more likely to choose it than flying. I mean, even look at the experience on the Northeast Corridor, where Amtrak is not exactly known for great customer service, and yet 75% of the business travel market between Washington and New York is out on Amtrak's Acela. So when you look at the Northeast Corridor, when you look at Florida, I think it's pretty hard to argue that no one's going to take this train if the high-speed rail line gets built.
That's Congressman Seth Moulton. Salem News State House reporter Christian Wade reports that the Massachusetts Teachers Association announced yesterday that supporters of the proposed referendum to end the MCAS test in the state will be turning in 135,000 signatures from registered voters to the Secretary of State's office. This clears a major hurdle to get the question on the ballot in 2024. The question would ask voters to scrap a graduation requirement for proficiency in math, English, and science for Massachusetts high school students. And the Cape Ann Museum's current new exhibition, Above the Fold, The Photographers of the Gloucester Daily Times, 1973 to 2005, features a selection of works by photojournalists shooting for the Times for over three decades. CAM director Oliver Barker explains.
There are lots of exciting things coming up, particularly in this next year. But I know today's conversation is really about Above the Fold, so I would just encourage anyone to avail themselves of the museum as their resource. And please make a point of joining us between now and March the 17th, when this exhibition will close. It's a really wonderful exhibition. Trenton and our other colleagues have done a tremendous job in putting a very thoughtful selection of images together. It's a wonderful showcase of almost contemporary Cape Ann. And so I hope people will come and see the exhibition. I'll draw attention to the fact that next weekend is going to be Middle Street Walk here in Gloucester. And so anyone who's able to is certainly welcome to visit the museum throughout the day on Saturday, December the 9th. And we would love to see people here. So there's always a lot happening. Our website's a great resource to keep everyone up to date. But do come see the show. We've got it for another couple of months, and it's a really tremendous exhibition.
That's Cape Ann Museum Director Oliver Barker. The exhibition continues through March 17. Bill Newell on sports is next as local players propel Endicott basketball to a win last night.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. Yes, we are a full-service lumber yard, but we also offer doors and windows and kitchen cabinets. Please visit us in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
MSO News Sports. News updates throughout the day. Great local sports coverage, giving voice to North Shore newsmakers.
This is MSO Sports bringing voice to the North Shore. The Bruins and Celtics were both off last night, and both are off again tonight. The Bruins will host the Sabres tomorrow night. The Patriots take on the Steelers tomorrow night in Thursday Night Football, and the Red Sox made a trade last night, sending Alex Verdugo to the Yankees for three pitchers. Endicott College men's basketball topped Suffolk last night, 93-88. Ty Vitko led all scorers with 30 points. He's out of Dover, New Hampshire. Jalen Echeverria out of Lynn had 21 points. Parker McLaren from Newburyport had a career-high 17 points, while Liam Dumphy of Nahant added 10 points in the Endicott men's basketball win. The Endicott women lost in overtime to Suffolk 71-64. The Paul Duchesne Girls Basketball Jamboree will be played Saturday at Lynn Classical. Here is Classical basketball coach Tom Sawyer.
It's a scholarship fundraiser for us. We are able to raise some funds to give away to deserving seniors at the end of the year. You get to see some good basketball. You get to see a lot of teams in a short period of time. Don't have to stay the whole day. You can see the games that you're interested in. And you know, buy something at the concession stand to help us out. And really look forward to the event.
We have a post with a complete listing of all the games and times for Saturday's event here on our website. Some local North Shore hockey teams will open up their season on Saturday. Linfield plays at Triton at noon at the Graf Rink at Newburyport. Linfield coach John Gardner on the preseason ending and the curtain going up on the main event, the regular season.
Yeah, so again, it's just a build up, you know, from first scrimmage to second to third, and then eventual, you know, lights, camera, action. You know, I would say this right in front of the Triton team, so I don't even care. It's like you're not trying to do any misinformation here. They have a really good goalie, and they have two defensemen that are pretty dynamic. So the big thing that we had is just cashing our chances. Get some traffic. Sounds pretty generic, but if the goalie can't see it, he's not going to stop it most of the time, or not be able to control the rebound as well. So we got to just get in front of that kid and just use our strength, which is our speed and our depth, and just kind of wear teams down. But every single game, with the exception of one, over the past, I don't know, 6-7 years, Ryan Sheen's coaches the Triton team. He's from Linfield. Every single time we play, I joke. It used to be like, whoever is going to win the last 5 minutes wins the game. Then it shifted to the last minute. Then it shifted to literally, did that beat the buzzer, like 0.7 second goals. He's done it to me. I've done it to him. So it's just going to be who makes plays at the end. And my guys will be, you know, expecting a good, hard-fought, close game to start the Cape Ann League. It's going to be exciting.
Linfield boys hockey coach John Gardner. This is North Shore Today, giving voice to the North Shore, the area's only daily news and sports podcast. Along with Rick Moore, I'm Bill Newell. Have a great Wednesday.
A unique holiday gift.
If you're tired of giving gifts that nobody wants or uses, think about giving something they actually need and use, like a soap bar. This is a brand new soap bar by the company Exo Bath. It's not just like any soap bar, it has a unique twist. It has a space carved into the top of it that then you can take an old soap sliver and put it right inside to reuse it. If you know somebody that uses soap bars, think about giving them this bar as a gift. It's available for purchase on xobath.com. And right now you can even get your first purchase 20% off with the code HELLOXO.
Click on the banner at the top of our website.
With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore, and really thrilled now to be talking once again with the Cape Ann Museum Director, Oliver Barker. But this time, you get to see his enthusiasm as well as listen to him, and also to the librarian and archivist, the chief librarian, Trenton Carls, at Cape Ann Museum. And Oliver, I want to thank you very much for taking the time once again. I am thrilled to be able to interview you and anybody you suggest because of what's going on over there at the museum. And in general, what is happening right now? Because the last time we talked, it was just before the Edward Hopper exhibition.
It was. And so now we're in the month of December. The museum's had 63,000 visitors this year. 36,000 of those came during the Hopper show. But I mentioned that because the museum is really taking a much more present in the community. And that's where today's exhibition that we're focused on, Above the Fog, which has been led by our head librarian and archivist, Trenton Carls, along with two wonderful colleagues, Catherine Miller and Megan Squibb, is really important because the exhibition is about showing and showcasing the stories of the people from these last four decades that have called Cape Ann home. It's a really rich exhibition of over 175 photographs, all drawn from the collection of the Gloucester Daily Times. This is a wonderful gift that came to the museum of over 1 million images in 2021. And Trenton and his team have been steadily digitizing those and processing them. And it's a wonderful project, and I encourage everyone to come see it because, as I say, they are the stories of the people of this place that are so important to us as an institution.
You mentioned the attendances you've had so far, and this brings me to my complaint that I warned you about. When I was on Pleasant Street this summer driving my car, you don't know how many times I had to stop at that crosswalk to see so many people going to the museum and coming out of the museum. And Oliver, it was a daily occurrence. And every time I did that, I just smiled and said, boy, this is really cool.
It is really cool. My office overlooks the street. So I saw it firsthand and quite often would pop out to help direct traffic when it seemed necessary. It is wonderful. I mean, obviously, it's been a banner year for the Cape Ann Museum. In 148 years, we've never had so many visitors. And what really warms my heart is that we've heard from so many local businesses about how the exhibition brought huge foot traffic to their stores as well. And that's so important because, as we know, museums, and particularly the Cape Ann Museum here in Gloucester, can be a real driver of cultural tourism. And we're just delighted to hear that people saw the effects of that in their own businesses here on Main Street.
You know, as a taxpayer who lives in the city, I'm happy to hear that. So I really appreciate that. That's awesome. All right. I want to talk with Trenton Carls now, who is the archivist and your head librarian. And Trenton, first of all, welcome to MSO. Can you give me a little background on how you ended up at the Cape Ann Museum, maybe where you're from, education, that kind of thing?
Absolutely. And thank you also, Rick, for having us. This is a real pleasure to get to speak about this exhibit that we've been working on for so long and share, you know, all the excitement that we're feeling here with you and your viewers. So I come from Illinois. I was born and raised in central Illinois in the cornfields of that wonderful world. When I was 18, I moved to Chicago. I eventually got my master's of library and information science at Dominican University, which is just outside of Chicago. And eventually, I made my way out here to Cape Ann. I've told this story a lot over the past weekend because it's so integral to our process here. But I started at the museum just over 4 years ago on November 12th, 2019. And I remember it so clearly because I had 1 week of calm and happiness until a gentleman with the backwards baseball cap and sunglasses on his head and a camera slung over his shoulder walked into the library and archives and said, "My name is Paul. I work at the Gloucester Daily Times. We would like to give you all of our photographs." And that began this 4 year long project of not only building this exhibit eventually, but also to obtain these documents that showcase the history of Cape Ann through photographs. So that's kind of what kicked everything off. You know, we had a pandemic in the middle there that slowed things down. And as Oliver mentioned, in 2021, the actual gift was made formal. And what happened during that time period was, you know, we went through the GDT offices, we dug in every closet and corner and basement that we could find, and we found as much as we could. And what it ended up being was a more or less complete documentation of the photographs that were taken by these photographers from 1973 to 2005. It was very encompassing, and there's a lot to that. But
that's kind of needless to say, you know, the main thrust of this interview is, of course, is to promote that, and I want to do that. But I'm very curious about your job, Trenton, because you know, reading in the Gloucester Times, we're talking about more than 20 pictures that you had to go through. How do you catalog it? How do you archive it? How do you select what is going to become new history as opposed to what old history was?
Yeah, you know, we're very fortunate in that the library and archives here at the museum has a long legacy of excellent librarians and archivists who have begun this work in years past. In 2004, the GDT actually gave an initial gift, and GDT is the acronym for Gloucester Daily Times, for those who don't know it, to the staff of the first full-time staff photographer, Charlie Lowe's images. So those were gifted in 2004, and then the procedures were started to be laid out at that point. Those were only about 30,000 images, so we had to spread that out to be a little bit bigger and more robust. But the job, you know, we hadn't tackled anything like that before. We were very fortunate, thanks to outside support, that we were able to bring back the position of photo archivist. It had become dormant over the years after the previous photo archivist had passed away. So we were able to bring that position back, and that's Megan Squibb, who is our current photo archivist and was integral into this exhibition. And so with her on staff, we were able to start sorting through these negatives in the ways we knew best. You know, chronological order is the easiest way to start. But what we started to find after we really dug in is that there were these names associated with these photographs that really started to tell a story. You could see, you know, one name up until a very specific date, and then they were gone, and then there was another name. And so diving into that history and that lineage of staff photographer is really how we got to our current organization of the collection, which is by photographer. So each individual has their own, in a sense, photo archive.
I'm going to pronounce archivist correctly from now on. Thank you.
My dad calls it an archivist, so it's
okay. Well, better than an anchovy. I just Oliver, I want to get back to you to ask you a general question about how this all comes about, because during the summer interview, you warned me that there are programs maybe a year, 2 years down the road that are in the making now, and it sounds like this was one of those projects.
It was. Many of these exhibitions, Hopper included, you know, it takes many, many people and many years to bring about. In the case of the Hopper Show, of course, that was a lone exhibition where we borrowed 64 other works to join the one Hopper that the Cape Ann Museum owns. In the case, of course, of Above the Fold, these are now fortunately a million images that we own, and that we have the wonderful privilege to steward and to safeguard. But of course, processing them, as Trenton has shared, we have begun that process. We're 12,000 images through, and of that, a selection of 175 images are now on view in the exhibition. So a different process in terms of developing this exhibition. However, the time frame was roughly the same, that we were working on Hopper concurrent to working on the Above the Fold exhibition. I should share, I think the interesting detail for many of your listeners is that very fortunately, most of the photographers who are featured in this exhibition are still with us. And so it's a wonderful showcase of these men and women who dedicated so much of their life to capturing the stories of this community. They joined us this past weekend, and that was very, very special that that we could be featuring their work in this way in our galleries.
How common is it for a local museum, a municipal museum, to be able to procure and secure these kinds of exhibitions, Oliver? Because this is some, people who don't ordinarily want to go to the Cape Ann Museum or even thought about it, they can't wait to get there. And this has been going on for a little while now. So this seems to be sort of like almost a revolution for our local museum.
What we tell is a local story, but one that is of national significance. And we can do that because I have colleagues like Trenton, like Megan and Catherine. They all sit within our collections team, which is headed by our chief curator, Martha Oakes. And that group of people, along with our museum educators, is really responsible for coming up with the ideas that we develop into shows. It's a collective effort. And I've just got this wonderful team of colleagues, but we also have ourselves a wonderful team of volunteers that support these efforts. Nothing is done in a silo. And yes, we have got some great stories yet to tell. So it doesn't stop with Above the Fold and Hopper. It only gets better from here.
All right. I love it. I love it. And here we are. All right, Trenton, I want to get back to you and ask you about when the photographers were there. Can you give me an idea of what their individual or collective responses was?
To being asked to be the feature of an exhibit?
Well, just to see, I think so, but also to see, I mean, I'm sure they looked at the stuff you had on display, is that correct?
They did, yes. So it's been a very collaborative process throughout. So Paul Bilodeau, the person I mentioned earlier who brought this gift to our attention, is the current staff photographer at the paper. But conveniently, he also had a stint at the paper in the mid-1990s. And so even though he fell outside of the range of or the scope of our show currently, he fit in there. So he was very active and very engaged in getting this collection and this exhibition off the ground. He sent out an email about a year ago to all the photographers that he knew that had worked at the paper during this time period. And we just said, hey, we're doing this thing. Like, would you be interested in helping out? And we got some very quick, very resounding absolutelys to that message. And some of the photographers within weeks had provided a package of their bio, their photographs that they felt were special, as well as captions. And they said, great, we'll see you in a year. Keep us updated if you need anything. Others we had to slowly track down, convinced that this was something that they would really enjoy being a part of. And in the end, we got everybody. And, all 15 photographers that are featured in this show, either them or their families, if they have passed, like is the case for Charlie Lowe and Sally O'Malley, have been extremely helpful from providing bios about their history at the Times to saying these are photos that really represent us well. And I actually posed this question at our panel discussion this past Saturday of how does it feel to be, the subject of an exhibition? Mm-hmm. And each and every one of them feels extremely honored. The role of a photojournalist, particularly at a local newspaper, is not always acknowledged for the hard work and the dedication that it takes. You're out there at all hours of the day in all weather. You're always up against the deadline and you publish the paper, you publish your photographs, and then you're on to the next thing. There are very few moments of reflection. For them to be able to see their work in this light, I think has been very touching to a lot of them. Though, as one photographer said in response to that, her daughter said that, don't you feel old now? You're in a museum. So there's that moment of candidness as well. So
I think that the idea of local photographer, newspaper photographers, it's so personal when you see these people, because if you live in a community, whether it's Salem, Beverly, Gloucester, wherever, you see them all the time at various events, whether they're newsworthy, sports, or just covering kids or entertainment or so on. And the other thing is people with the digital age now, A lot of people will see something in the paper and say, gee, I want that. So they'll get a hold of the local newspaper, and lo and behold, you get a digital copy of it. So that in and of itself is kind of revolutionary. But in terms of the actual exhibit or exhibition, and there are some really historic pictures I know that have been in the Times. How did you come about? Maybe this is a general question that Oliver can pick up later, too. How do you decide what goes on display?
The art of curation. So it was challenging. I mean, when you have a million photographs of a place over a 32-year history, it is not easy to say this is the one that will represent this person or this time period. We had a loose story that we wanted to tell. We wanted to focus on, you know, the elements that these photojournalists brave, the varying aspects of the Cape Ann community. For instance, if somebody submitted one of their photographs of the Gloucester High School football team, we knew that we probably shouldn't have a second or third photograph of the Gloucester High School football team in there. As great as these photographs were, we wanted to have one image represent a portion of the community in certain ways. Same with town coverage. You know, we have a section in which we feature Manchester by the Sea, Essex, and Rockport. And so we wanted to be sure that we were, you know, selecting photographs that allowed everybody who visited to see themselves in a shot. I didn't grow up here, as I mentioned, but there's this great photo that we chose by Mary Roy towards the end of the exhibition. And it's a kid with a fishing pole from about 2003. And he's got these really baggy black Nike basketball shorts on. You know, you don't see those much anymore, but like, that's me, you know, like I see myself in that photograph. Mm. I wasn't here. I wasn't fishing on Lane's Cove, you know, but you can acknowledge that moment in time or that place or that feeling. And I think we did a good job of capturing a lot of those moments. There have been so many moments over this past weekend where, you know, somebody comes up to me and says, oh, you know, that's my cousin's, you know, uncle's brother, nephew. So there is the familiarness to all of this that everybody sees themselves or somebody they know in it.
All right. I want to get back to that in just a second to maybe get a final thoughts on the exhibition itself and promoting it and the best way to get to see it. But I want to go back to Oliver for a second. Oliver, this is probably this comes from ignorance. The logistics of planning exhibitions, rotating exhibitions, for example, tell me how that works, please, because you only have so much limited space at the museum.
We do. As many of your listeners may know, the museum now, thanks to the creation of a second campus, the Cape Ann Museum Green, which we opened in 2020 in the height of the pandemic, we now actually have two spaces that we are in the business of programming. It's a good problem to have. Our second campus is 4 acres at the gateway to Gloucester, and we are using that space. It's where we store our collections, but there's also within the Janet and William Ellery James Center, a wonderful 2,000 square foot exhibition space that has been designed for the display of more contemporary art and also for three-dimensional or sculptural objects. So, In terms of the planning, we have a senior leadership team here at the museum. We meet regularly. We talk about the sorts of issues and artists that we want to represent. As a museum, the museum is committed to telling the story of the singularly unique place. We're focused on the art, the history, and the culture of Cape Ann generally. And so that is a very strong mission. And so we are very mission driven and always looking for stories to tell within that framework. So there are exhibitions that are have a much shorter gestation period than 4 years. But many of these big shows, which we put on with great intention, do take time to develop.
Okay. Trenton, excuse me. Tell me, please, about the exhibition itself, logistically, where it's located within the museum, how do people get to see it, and what are they going to see?
Okay, so the exhibition is up on our third floor of the museum at 27 Pleasant Street. It is in the same space that the Edward Hopper exhibition was. And you can come visit the museum each Tuesday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Sunday from 1 to 4 p.m. What they will see is a look back through the photography and photojournalistic history of Cape Ann for a 32-year period. It is important to point out that it is 32 years. We don't have the GDT photographs prior to 73, and the Gloucester Daily Times and North of Boston Media Group has retained the photographs from 2006 to present. We may get those at a later date, but for now we're focused on these 32 years. And when you walk in, you're introduced to kind of the legacy of the photojournalistic department at the Gloucester Daily Times. So Charlie Lowe, we reflect on his time at the paper and kind of what he did for the newspaper and to change that from being, you know, these static events to the more dynamic and artistic captures that he was able to obtain. There is what we're lovingly calling our giant newspaper that folks will see as they walk in. And as Oliver pointed out, it makes you feel very small in front of it because it is a large mock-up of a giant recreation of a newspaper that introduces our topics and kind of covers what people are about to see. It turned out really beautifully. And then you go around and you get each of these individuals' perspectives. We have highlighted 5 to 8 photographs by each individual that really captures the essence of what style they had and their approach. And we have that for each individual. We also look at the evolution of the technology that these photographers were using. So on the cases throughout the gallery, you see the early 35 millimeter film cameras. You get to see how developing in the darkroom took place. One of the areas of there is the enlargement and making contact sheets was not something I could visualize until I actually saw it in process. And so we worked through that up until, of course, the digital transition. And so, you know, in 2002, Mike Dean, the staff photographer, makes the proposal to say we need to switch to digital, and they do immediately. And the benefits were instant. So you get to see the early digital cameras and things like that. We also have 2 fun interactives. We have a light box display in which you can see negatives, see the contact sheets, see the prints, and then see the final newspaper above it, which kind of helps you visualize that entire process. And then we have a photo assignment interactive in which people can give the current staff photographer a photo assignment to shoot that we hope will be actually published in the paper at a future date. So there's a lot to see, a lot to take in, but at the end of it, it's just a lot of beautiful photographs and a great story.
Anybody living on Cape Ann or at the North Shore for that matter has got to see this because everybody's familiar with Charlie Lowe and all the people who have followed after. One final question, Trenton, about the photojournalism. Like artists, does each journalist have a certain, as you mentioned, style that you recognized or that you could describe? I'm not asking you to, but that could be described.
Yeah, each one is extremely unique. I got to the point when we were flipping through these negatives and through these prints because I could see the photograph and I could tell you exactly whose it was. I mean, part of that is era. You know, Jim Mahoney, who was the first photographer after Charlie Lowe, had a very distinct style. There's this thing called the fist of God that when you're developing in a dark room, you're putting your fist over the subject and it's burning the edges around it. And so it leaves this kind of glowing space right around the subject. He said that was really popular during his time period, and it's very evident in a lot of his images. Up through Josh Reynolds in the late 1990s, who was a self-described risk taker, climbing up on the top of schooner masts, on top of a Ferris wheel, and you're really seeing these dynamic shots that you can tell take a lot of bravery to do. So yeah, each one brings their own style, their own favorite subjects. We have Mary Roy to round out the exhibition, who loves capturing the interesting and fun faces of children, and she has a real knack for grabbing that moment. So it's really great to see them all together in a gallery and see how that process has changed over the past 32 years, but also to celebrate their uniqueness.
That is tremendous. That I can't wait to get over there myself and see it. I'm happy when I can recognize Beethoven on the radio and say, hey, I know that one. So that's pretty cool. Before I finish it up with Oliver Trentner, is there anything else you'd like to mention, either about the exhibit, the exhibition, your job, or the museum itself?
Sure, and thank you for asking. You know, these photographs, well, Oliver mentioned that we have 175 of them up on the walls. The remaining million are down here in the library and archives at the lower level of the museum. As he mentioned, also, we are in the process of organizing and digitizing these. If you know the date in which your photograph was taken and placed in the paper, we can probably find it for you. And we have digitized over 12,000 of these, and they're actually available online at the museum's new digital collections page called Cortex. So you can find that with a quick Google search, and it is from our website as well. So we'll be adding more every day as a collection that we're excited to continue to dig into. We could have done this exhibit in 5 years and had an entirely different crop of images. And so it's going to just continue to reveal exciting, wonderful quality images.
Tremendous. And Oliver, the same question to you, sir. What else would you like to mention about either this exhibition or the museum in general? Because you do have on the website many ongoing programs as well.
Yeah, lots of exciting things coming up, particularly in this next year. But I know today's conversation is really about Above the Fold. So I would just encourage anyone to avail themselves of the museum as their resource. And please make a point of joining us between now and March the 17th, when this exhibition will close. It's a really wonderful exhibition. Trenton and our other colleagues have done a tremendous job in putting a very thoughtful selection of images together. It's a wonderful showcase of almost contemporary Cape Ann. And so I hope people will come and see the exhibition. I'll draw attention to the fact that next weekend is going to be Middle Street Walk here in Gloucester. And so anyone who's able to is certainly welcome to visit the museum throughout the day on Saturday, December the 9th. And we would love to see people here. So there's always a lot happening. Our website's a great resource to keep everyone up to date. But do come see the show. We've got it for another couple of months. And it's a really tremendous exhibition.